Ever notice how you can justify almost any purchase after you've made it? That $200 pair of sneakers suddenly becomes an investment in foot health. The luxury car transforms into a safety decision for the family. We're remarkably skilled at constructing rational explanations for decisions that weren't rational at all. Consider this. When NBA players were asked who should take a game-winning shot, 76% chose Kobe Bryant, despite him missing 75% of such attempts. Meanwhile, Carmelo Anthony, who made 48.1% of game winners compared to Bryant's dismal 25%, barely registered in their minds. These are professional athletes whose careers depend on understanding performance, yet they chose based on fame, salary, and gut feeling rather than evidence. This isn't stupidity. It's how human minds actually work. We make decisions through mental shortcuts, familiarity, status signals, physical attractiveness, and compelling narratives. Then we reverse engineer logical justifications. Whether buying homes, choosing doctors, or selecting investments, we're driven by forces we barely recognize, let alone control. Historian Johan Huizinga argued we should be called Homo ludens, man the player, not Homo sapiens. Our language proves it. We win accounts, score deals, and hit it out of the park. Americans spend over $77 billion annually on lottery tickets, more than Microsoft's total revenue. Smart companies exploit this instinct. Apple's iPhone uses bright Fisher-Price colors with playful icons. Ben & Jerry's wraps ice cream in cartoons and puns. Costco transforms shopping into a treasure hunt, where diamond rings sit beside bulk toilet paper. Most telling, economist Ulrike Malmendier found eBay customers routinely ignore buy it now options, preferring auctions where they typically pay more because they want the game more than the bargain. Our brains crave surprise. Judy Garland's octave leap in Over the Rainbow, the Beatles' mysterious opening chord in A Hard Day's Night, decoded by a mathematician after 45 years, Stevie Wonder's unexpected black keys in Superstition. These elements create emotional resonance that predictable patterns never could. But surprise alone isn't enough. We need it wrapped in story. Every major religion centers around narratives, not abstractions. When CBS's 60 Minutes struggled, producer Don Hewitt transformed it with one insight: tell me a story. As he noted, even Bible writers understood this. The issue was evil. The story was Noah. Reagan connected Challenger astronauts to Sir Francis Drake. King's I Have a Dream speech painted vivid scenes of former slaves and slave owners together. Jay Peterman transformed ordinary clothing into treasures through storytelling, turning shirts into Jay Gatsby's shirts. We remember a single surprising story better than nine disconnected facts, which is why George Eliot's old grandfather rode a pig home yesterday, helped schoolchildren spell geography. From childhood, we learn that big equals dangerous, while small represents good. David defeats Goliath. Jack outsmarts the giant. The big bad wolf terrorizes innocent pigs. This mythology shapes our adult worldview. We distrust big business, big government, and big oil, while romanticizing small enterprises as artistic endeavors rather than mere commerce. Even our language reveals this bias. Large companies are businesses, but small ones are enterprises. Yet here's the American paradox. While Thomas Jefferson chose life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness over the French liberty, equality, and fraternity, seemingly declaring we're all in this for ourselves, Americans simultaneously fear isolation more than almost anything. Our iconic paintings, American Gothic, Whistler's Mother, Christina's World, all depict solitary figures. Our music obsesses over loneliness. When the 2004 Indonesian tsunami struck, Americans donated millions and flew to affected regions to help rebuild. We want to stand apart while desperately needing to belong. Companies like Harley-Davidson exploit this brilliantly through HOG, Harley Owners Group, transforming motorcycle ownership into community membership, what marketers call community as a service. We resist even minor changes to familiar things. When Marshall Field's became Macy's in 2006, thousands stopped shopping there, despite nothing else changing. They mourned losing a name tied to cherished memories. The Beatles faced similar resistance when Capitol and Atlantic Records rejected their singles and American Bandstand teenagers laughed at their haircuts. Manager Brian Epstein's breakthrough was titling their debut Meet the Beatles and filling it with songs that spoke directly to listeners. I Want to Hold Your Hand, I Want to Be Your Man, transforming the unfamiliar into the beloved through personal connection. Yet Americans possess uniquely optimistic outlooks. During the 2008 recession, 54% remained optimistic about their economic futures, while European majorities were pessimistic. Over 80% of Americans believe in miracles versus just 39% of Germans. This optimism creates fertile ground for marketers who understand that stuff sells well, but optimism sells even better. Exemplified by USA Today's Cheerier America, Target's smiling website visitors, and Malcolm Gladwell's hopeful narratives that capture the American spirit. We've entered the age of the eye, where visual impact dominates. Blue Moon beer sales soared after adding an orange slice garnish. Tropicana lost 20% of sales after removing its iconic straw and orange image. Our obsession with beauty is ancient. Archaeologists discovered perfectly symmetrical hand axes from 400,000 years ago, their makers creating aesthetically pleasing tools before language existed. We're naturally drawn to symmetry and smoothness, associating rough textures with danger. We love circles over squares. Harvey Ball's simple smiley face became iconic by tapping into this preference. Yet complexity has become our enemy. A 2008 Philips Electronics study found that half of the $100 billion in annual product returns weren't due to defects, but because consumers couldn't figure out how to use them. Most gave up after just 20 minutes. In contrast, Apple's iPod Shuffle exemplifies radical simplicity with just four functions. Other masters include Chipotle with its limited menu, Costco carrying just four toothpaste brands versus Walmart's 60, and Google's minimalist homepage. When companies don't simplify, we do it ourselves. Of 140,000 smartphone apps available, the average person uses just seven. Our expectations fundamentally shape reality. Housekeepers who believed their work counted as exercise lost weight. Diners praised Pizza Hut pasta as marvelous in fancy settings. The Pepsi Challenge paradox illustrates this perfectly. While people preferred Pepsi blind, they kept buying Coke. Brain scans revealed that knowing they were drinking Coke activated their sense of self, overriding taste. A builder felt excruciating pain from a nail that merely passed between his toes. We don't experience things. We experience our ideas of things. Most thinking isn't rational. Our emotions decide while our brains draft justifications afterward. We're simultaneously social creatures craving belonging and individualists wanting customization. We prefer the familiar because brands represent safe, fast choices. We think primarily with our eyes. Beauty signals safety. Imperfections suggest danger. Design has become the grave differentiator as simplicity becomes beautiful. Above all, reputation shapes our actual experiences. In a world where possible neural interactions outnumber all particles in the universe, the wisest response is acknowledging how little we understand about why we do what we do, and remaining curious about the magnificent mystery of human decision-making.